Alrighty, good morning. I'm definitely tired today. In case you listen to this later on, I've got my tennis hat on. We get a lot of sun here in Australia. Not so much in my office, that's fine. Get a lot of sun in the country, a lot of sun where we live, and we're outdoors a lot. So every year we go and get skin checks where you go into the doctor, and they literally go over you with like a microscope, like that's not a proper microscope, a little thing. And they look at any little dot on you and they go, that one looks a little bit weird, but it's okay, we'll look at it next year. And we do this every year. And this year, they found two little dots on me, but that I had really not even noticed. And they're like, that looks suspicious, and that looks suspicious. So, this is why I'm on the hat. Wherever, turn the camera around. So, I got one little one they took off here. And if you go and look back at the photo, because I was later on, I was like, did I even have it? I don't know. I don't pay that much attention. But did I have that dot in my face? Like, yeah, okay, that's been there for a very long time. But they went, okay, we're going to take that out. So they chopped that off. And then there's the one on the back of my hand, which is kind of odd because like, I look at my hand and it's like, well, there's lots of freckles on my hand. Like, why does it matter? And then they get the little microscope on it and they look at it. It's like, see how it's not like perfectly round? It's got some little bits on the edge. So what they do is they call it a hole punch, and I'm quite okay with needles and stuff. So like I couldn't watch when they're doing my head, but I'm watching when they do the hand, and it almost looks like they've got a little pin, and they've got different diameter blades on the bottom, which is just like a circle. So anyway, they get this 3 mil one, and they just put it on a little local anesthetic there, and they do it like this, and they slice off a little bit, and then they send off for biopsy to make sure it's okay, and they put a stitch in the head and a stitch in the hand, and then they send you off. But it means that I got this little dot, which is really not too bad, on the head with the stitch, and I can't get it wet until later today after it's been 48 hours. So I haven't been like showering or looking after my personal hygiene the same as usual. Hence the hat, gets it out of the way, stops me from bumping it as well. So I'll get back on Wednesday, and they take the stitch out, and they have the biopsy results, and hopefully they'll go, yeah, no worries. Business as usual. Make sure you wear sunscreen and a hat, which I do consistently. So let's chuck that on Do Not Disturb. And worst case, the guy, we've got to take more of it, and who knows. But what fascinated me is it's the sort of stuff where you'd never proactively go to the doctor because you're like, oh, I've got this little, this little dot, because it didn't meet any of the criteria that we keep getting told about in order to look for because they're just so freaking small. So anyway. If you are in Australia, if you're in a sunny place of the world, once a year, go and get that checked out because it's a bit of a no-brainer. George, g'day, George. Thomas, evening from dreary England. You don't have to worry too much about sun damage. Sorry, in England. Thomas is here as well. G'day, everyone. Thank you for joining. We will talk about England today. It's the last thing on my list down there. Sponsor first. Sponsor this week is Report URI, who I kind of feel needs no introduction. This week, Scott's brainchild from many years ago that I've been involved with for many years also. Guarding you from rogue JavaScript, don't get pwned, get real-time alerts and prevent breaches. Hashtag secure your site. And Report Your Eyes has been just awesome to watch grow from a pet project to what it is today, which okay, sounds kind of familiar. But Scott's done an amazing job with it. If you're not using Report URI already, go and check it out. Start sending your CSP reports there, among the other sorts of things that it does. Big thanks there. Hey there, Scott. Excellent. G'day, Scott. Thank you for joining. I only said nice things, mate, honestly. All right. Jumping into content of the day, the interesting stuff. Now, the last few weeks, I've been talking about tuning SQL Server for Have I Been Pwned? And you may have sensed the frustration in my voice. This has been not only very time-consuming and very painful because of just the sheer volume of data, about 5.5 billion unique email addresses, and then I think it's 12.5 billion instances of an email address in a breach, i.e., each email address has been pwned roughly two times. Huge amount of data. So changing things like indexes is very time consuming. The other thing is it's been very expensive to do because in order to change indexes to check performance and things, I've just been sliding the cloud needle all the way across to like give me all the cloud and then it will make the change go as fast as possible. But of course, you pay because you're paying for cores per second with Azure Serverless Hyperscale, which is what we're running on. And that has been, I'm looking at my accumulated costs here. It's not fun. Like it's not a fun process. But this is just that place where investment is needed. Just as we've been able to do things like put a cost on domain searches, now we can actually use the money to do things like this and hopefully make the whole thing a lot better. Now, I've had some really good input from people who've popped up and said, look, I'd like to help. There's a bunch of well-wishers who are like, I don't really know what I'm doing, but have you tried? And say, okay, well, you know, thank you. I appreciate the thought. Someone who actually does know what they're doing, who are SQL Server MVP with a lot of experience, popped up and offered Stefan and I some support. I won't name them yet because I haven't asked them if that's okay, but I'd love to in the future. And they have given us some really, really epically good suggestions, stuff that goes beyond our skill set. Yeah, I think the first time I ever wrote a SQL query, I remember doing a course at university. I think I still kept the book, one of the few books I kept, which would have been 1995. And Scott laughs as I date myself. Anywho, like I've been writing SQL for a lot of time, but I feel like SQL Server in particular is just one of these things that has so many hidden depths and layers, and you can spend a lifetime of your career doing all the stuff on the surface and getting away with it. But when you really need to get into the weeds of it, you need someone who actually knows what they're doing. So this gentleman has helped us find a whole bunch of different optimizations here, particularly things like two of the big things we did is turned on compression and set different fill factors on page sizes. Now the compression thing, both Steph and I were like, why have we never thought about this before? Because one of the things it's done is it's cut about 2/3 of the size of the database. And apparently what happens when you compress is you, I think from memory, you put more burden, you put more burden on CPU, of which we have ample based on all our metrics. But then you take a lot of burden off things like memory and other areas because it's just not as much data to store. And we've actually made some really, really massive gains there. And in fact, one of the key metrics we've had is inserting into the mapping table that matches a breach to an email address. All you're doing is you're inserting two keys. It's literally just, hey, there's an email address ID and a breach ID, insert a key. But that's the table that's got like the 12.5 billion records in it. Now, by making those optimizations in particular, we got the load time down for breaches that are in the 2.5-ish million range from like 40 minutes down to 2 minutes, you know? So that is a massive, massive gain. And we're just tweaking around trying to improve the speed into the email address table. We've had a few more optimizations that our SQL guru has sent last night, which I'll be using in the next data breach load to try and measure. But I suspect we're at the point where we're faster than what it was before when we're loading just into table storage, and we will be faster again yet, which is going to be really, really important when we get that next 100 million, 200 million, 500 million record data breach, just to be able to load stuff fast. Scott's still being snarky. Thanks, mate. Back in the age of the dinosaurs, I'm from the 1970s SQL Server when it was more of a text file. I say, Scott, there's people older than me here. Thank you very much. So anyway, we made a lot of good gains there. Now, we're still trying to maintain parity at the moment between the old data structure and table storage and the new data structure SQL Server. And part of, can I pivot into the next thing? Yeah, let's pivot into the screw the email RFC thing, because part of our process in rolling across was to try and clean up some of the data that has been accumulated over a decade plus and get rid of some of the junk, you know, just email addresses that aren't email addresses, but they adhered to the pattern I was using at the time. Now, unfortunately, we just discovered as part of that process, we have also excluded some legit stuff. And that's an easy fix because everything that we excluded, we put in a separate file so we can pull that back in. That's going to be my job today. So we'll be at parity there. But part of the problem too has been, how do you define what an email address is? And this sounds on the surface of it like a stupid question, because it's like, oh, some text and then at and then as a domain name. But it's not, because once you start to delve into it, and particularly once you start to take a very religious view of this RFC, it's painful. Like you can have curly braces, for example, but I think they have to be encapsulated in quotes and just like really, really weird stuff. And the problem that we're having, and this really reared its head when I loaded the AT&T data, is that the open source email extractor tool we have, it's in the Have I Been Pwned GitHub, under the Have I Been Pwned GitHub account, if anyone wants to take a look at it. It looked at things like the pipe symbol and said, well, a pipe symbol is a potentially valid part of an email address. Now I ask you, have you ever seen another human with an email address with a pipe symbol in it? Like it just, it doesn't happen. And in the issue that we've got open on that repository, someone went through and they went through all the major email providers to see what you could actually use as characters. So yeah, Gmail, Outlook, Yahoo, all these sorts of things. And it basically boiled down to letters, numbers, dash, underscore, plus, dot. And then you can't have a dot in the first position. And that was the consistent rule. None of them allow a pipe or a curly brace or just weird shit that shouldn't be there. Now, we don't want to get into a situation where we're sort of going, well, if the email provider is this, then allow those characters, or if it's that, then allow those characters, whatever else. We just want to get it to the point where there's a set of rules which allow us to take, in the case of AT&T, alleged AT&T, we take a line that's got piped limited field and we're able to extract an email address from that without having to go through and declare that this is a piped limited thing and actually sort of parse the data out. Now, in doing that, it is literally a screw the RFC moment. That's where I got to the other day. Someone online got upset. Boy, it's a week for that. Scott knows what I mean. Where were we? Someone got upset and they're like, this is why we can't have nice things. This is why stuff breaks because people don't follow the RFC. You know, and you're literally excluding people. So, well, you know, it's actually the other way around where because this pattern is just simply not used in practice in real email addresses, but it is used in practice as a delimiter, we're actually missing email addresses that we could otherwise extract because of a strict adherence to an RFC, which is not implemented by the major email providers anyway. So I'll tell you about that later, mate. Maybe I'll call you after this. I'll wrap it all up by saying we sort of got to the point now where I think this is going to be our golden rule for extracting email addresses from a data breach. I'm caveating that because there are other points, for example, where people provide an email address for notifications, but I think we probably should have the same rules. We're getting to the point now where this is what it's going to be. Letters, numbers, underscore, hyphens, plus symbol, and a period, so long as it's not in the first position. And so long as an email address adheres to that, it's an email address. If it doesn't, it's not an email address. That's going to be very important because that needs to go into the email extractor tool for when we get new email addresses from a breach. And also we need to use that logic to go back to a whole bunch of email addresses that we rejected because we were too strict in our criteria. We rejected on the rollover from table storage to SQL Server. I must have written like a decade ago about the futility of trying to validate email addresses with regexes. And focusing on the RFC is just the absolute wrong way to do this. I'm going to upset people. But it is nuts because this is just not the way it works in practice. And if for no other reason, then let's say you've got your own mail server and you can configure whatever aliases you want and you do something that is RFC compliant and you put curly braces in there, but you encapsulate them in quotes and you escape with backslash. Yeah, all the usual sort of shit that we see all the time in terms of using weird characters and strings. How many places can you actually go and use that? Can you go and create an eBay account? Can you sign up for online shopping? Can you use that on your average forum? And it would be blocked in so many different places that I think it's a reasonable conclusion that anyone with these characters in their account is almost certainly not using a valid email address. That's going to be my law. This is a dictatorship, this project. Ultimately, eventually I get to say, nope, we're not going to do that. So that's where I think we are. So we need to now do that consistently across the board, and then we can do some of the data cleanup. And where I was going with all this as it relates to the SQL tuning we're now getting very close to the point where we can actually start querying the new data set as opposed to the old data set. And we've got some really good ideas about how we're going to optimize this and massively cache it and actually not hit the database that much. I think I'm going to talk about that in the future after we actually do it, because it's a pretty cool thing. Okay, Thomas says, FastMile won't let me create an alias with those weird characters, but it will let me send from it by virtue of Thunderbird and being in control of the domain. And you've used so many words there which normal people don't understand. And what which is fine, but what I mean by that is that they're extreme edge cases. And if you did try to use those extreme edge cases and say put in email addresses that had funky characters into those other places, you'd probably get blocked. But as you say, it'd be madness to try and use, seeing as how many aliases break, reject, plus aliases. How many sites break, reject, plus aliases. You know, sub-addressing where you're like, hey, I'm John plus Amazon at mydomain.com. And yeah, a lot of sites will disallow that. So anyway, on to happier things. The Prusa Mark IV. So I've got a thread going on Twitter. We still call it that. Thread going on Twitter with the build process. I think today, my 11-year-old daughter and I will finish building the Mark IV, which I'm really, really excited about. Just building the whole thing from scratch, like I did the Mark III, you can see so many different ways in which it's improved, particularly around that extruder. And it was very well demonstrated this week when we got one of those like rainbow filaments that changes color along the filament. And I'm trying to print something with the Mark III, and I was actually having trouble grabbing the filament. I just don't think they have quite the same quality control as Prusa's own filament. And the design of the extruder in the Mark IV just looks so much more solid in terms of the gears that will actually grab the filament rather than this like tiny, tiny little gear that was just slipping on it. Anywho, I'll keep going on the thread with that. We are working eventually towards doing a joint presentation at NDC Oslo in about 2.5 months from now. So we're building the printer, we're doing the presentation. I've got a Friday keynote to do there as well, so which is going to be an all new thing. I'll talk more about in the future. But follow along with that build thread, and if you're tempted to have a go at 3D printing, it's so much fun, and particularly if you've got kids. It's just so, so cool for kids. So check out that thread. You'll see that hopefully wrap up this week. Now, something else that just popped up this week that made me really happy. I'm going to bring this data up. So Ubiquiti via the Unify platform has introduced facial recognition for their AI cams. Now, this is pretty cool. And full disclosure, they send me all this stuff. I bought a lot of Ubiquiti stuff many years ago and I loved it and I wrote about it. And they went, would you like more of it? And I said, yes, I'd love to have more of it. So one of the things that they've launched in recent years is these AI-enabled cams. Now, of course, everything cool is AI these days. But the AI stuff has a lot of really cool detection capabilities. So, for example, number plate detection. It's been there for quite a while. So we've got a camera mounted in a spot on the driveway, which is specifically designed to be able to catch number plates, because we have had break-ins and problems like this, and it's kind of good data to have. Now, they just added facial recognition, which is pretty cool. Now, it's only added to the AI cams, which so far looks like it only works on my driveway cam. But I'm just going through looking at the list of detections, and it's kind of cool, actually. There's different sort of things you can detect. So it's had, for example, animal for a while. So we live in an area where a lot of people walk their dogs past. So when I click on the animal detections, I've just got like a page for like poodles and Labradors and think, oh, geez, and Charlotte. Oh, that's that sounded much worse than what it is. Why did that pick up her? I think it might be the print on her clothes. Oh, that's wild. Oh, that sounded really bad. It does pick up birds as well, which is kind of cool. But no facial recognition for the dogs yet, as far as I can tell. But the detections, it's got animal detections, it's got vehicle detection, package detection, person detection, that's been there a while, and now the face detection. So what I'm really hoping is that they do, at the moment I've got a G4 Pro doorbell, I'm hoping they do a doorbell that has face detection via AI in it. And then when someone comes and they ring the door, and if we can identify them fast enough and I can raise that as events in Home Assistant, I can start to do really cool stuff. And as I said to Ubiquity on the public thread there, I would love a real estate agent detection capability because when I get that, I'm going to have a lot of fun. We get a lot of door knocks. Eddie likes my hat. Yeah, you might have missed the start. I had a mole cut out. So it's kind of saving me from bumping my head and also hiding my super messy hair that I haven't been able to wash until later today. Bonnie says, off topic, is there a reliable source to find out more information on the Loan Depot ransomware breach? I got a notification. They offered the usual garbage Experian Identity Works for 1 year free. I don't even know if I've sent any information on that. So short of Googling and finding news or sending them an email and asking them if there's specific questions you have, I wouldn't know. But, you know, hey, I mean, I guess take the identity theft protection. Maybe you'll learn something interesting. But definitely get in touch with the company if they're giving you stuff and you have questions about what the security incident is. Because we know companies are very good at responding to security incidents and giving you serious answers. Speaking of which, England cricket. Now, how do we approach this? There's a lot of data breaches happening. And a lot of these data breaches often appear on what I refer to as a popular hacking forum. Now, in the coming months, year, whatever, I'll be naming what it is because it'll be taken down like all the other ones before it have been taken down. But for the moment, it's a popular hacking forum. It appears there. There are a number of Twitter accounts that have been very good at monitoring that location as well as ransomware, Tor hidden service websites as well, and tweeting about new security incidents. And one of these accounts, I'm going to find it now, tweeted about the English cricket board having had a data breach, allegedly, with data posted to one of these websites during the week. So let's have a look at where this is. Here we go. Dark Web Informer. Now, this was 5 days ago. Here's their tweet. Allegedly prolific threat actor Intel Broker has exposed data from ECB, which is the England cricket board, for people, let's say from America, let's just say it's like baseball, but different. This is the England and Wales cricket board, dated 2014 to 2021. They claim the data shows emails, hash passwords, backup passwords, and tokens. Now, I did go and take a look at this data and verified it very quickly. It is a legitimate breach. I didn't say that at the time, but there's already a Twitter thread out there in the public. So I quoted it and asked if anyone had a contact at English Cricket. Now, this was 3 days ago. I also sent them an email. A couple of days went by. I didn't get any response. I followed up again yesterday. All attempts to contact England Cricket have gone straight through to the keeper. Any other ideas? That won't make sense to Americans, sorry. Frustrating is that social account is actively tweeting and they really want to take a look at the breach claim. Failing that, more cricket euphemisms are welcome because a bunch of people came back with some pretty funny cricket euphemisms about an otherwise serious topic. So I did eventually get an email from someone at England Cricket last night and said they'd be disclosing shortly. And then I woke up this morning and saw the disclosure, which is good. So it's not a particularly large breach. I think the number of unique email addresses I might even have sitting here somewhere because I've been waiting to get in touch with them. It's not that one. What was that one? Oh, yeah. I can't talk about that one yet. But that's significant. I've got to disclose to them. They're not going to be happy. What about that one? Was it that one? No, that was GSM hosting. We've done GSM hosting. I have a feeling it might be on my laptop. But it was somewhere around 140,000 email addresses or something to that effect. So that'll go into Have I Been Pwned probably somewhere in the next few hours. And again, we will test the new import process for SQL Server. Not a very large one, though. This sounds terrible saying it this way. But I need some larger data breaches in order to test how that process performs with volume. I'm sure that will happen soon. In fact, this one I've got to disclose is a larger one. All right, so that's the English cricket breach. So, interesting one there, but pretty benign in the scheme of things. So I'll get that out. As I said before, I do have a backlog of, let's call them legacy data breaches, that I'm working through and particularly using to test this import process. There are a bunch of other incidents as well. Many I'm in the process of disclosing. Some of them, I think some of them I just need to put in my memoirs like a long way from now in terms of the pain of dealing with these. Anyway, we'll get to that. All right, look, I'm going to wrap it up there because I've got a big day ahead with a bunch of this tuning. I've got to finish that 3D printer, and then I've got to figure out why Ubiquity recognized Charlotte as being an animal. I'm kind of curious as to why that happened, and I think there's going to be some hilarity in that process. Thanks very much for watching. I'll catch you next week.